as far as Ashoka.
Not enough.
This book is 50. Professor from Calcutta University.
It's at the Abbey.
Mahayana Buddhist philosophy. He presents most of the history of Mahayana.
You know, this idea about the development of Mahayana is quite recently my idea. So tradition, you should know tradition. I said so many times.
Yep.
But you should not stop at tradition. I also said so many times. So, did you see the video where I explained Mahayana beginning?
Yeah.
Buddhist door.
Yeah, it's a Buddhist door.
So it's quite clear, the explanation.
It's confusing, not clear.
It's quite simple. You know, it's quite simple, basically.
Yeah.
But if it's new, it looks confusing.
Confusing, yeah.
If it's new, it's not what you used to hear. But that's
what makes it understandable.
Anyway, this has been there for about 1 month now.
Yeah.
And so far, I did not get any angry emails yet.
Well,
I was talking about Buddhist door. Did you see it?
Yeah.
So I was expecting some traditional scholars saying you got it all wrong, whatever, so scolding me as I should study the basics again and think like that. Sometimes people become very emotional. You know.
Sometimes they're talking like this way.
Yes.
Like in Sabudi, I
don't know. He's not very Buddhist, I know, but you know, Aryadeva and Nagarjuna, they cut off their head, you know.
Yeah.
They're very troublesome monks. But no, so far, to my great surprise, nobody even made any remark about it. So it's all positive, which is also not normal.
I think it's mental development.
No, but it is quite simple. It's just not. There are two things which are very important, and if you know those two things, you can know many new things. And I'll tell you which is the location of what is Jibin and Kache in Tibetan. What is it? Where is it? This is a very important thing. If you know where it is and what it is, this is already one great step. Just like Armstrong landing on the moon. This is one small step for me, one giant leap for mankind. This is, if you know where Jibin is, those kids, so Bhaktya, Gandhara, and Kashi. Traditional Jibin is that, yes?
Traditional Jibin.
Bhaktya is Afghanistan, Gandhara is Pakistan. This is the traditional GB. And the G and the B. It is not the sound which counts. G means Kambala. G means Kambala. By the way.
Blanket.
Blanket or whatever. You can make clothes with it and hang it on the wall and whatever. So Kambala. And by the way. The Kashmir also begins with Ka, yes? Kashmir also begins with Ka, so it is no surprise that some people have thought this Jibin is Kashmir. No, because it also begins with the Ka. The G stands for Ka or Ka or whatever. And Bin means is a foreigner. Foreign guest.
Foreigner.
So, as I said, so Jibin are guests who are famous for their kambala. They have come to China with their kambala, which is very appreciated in Central Asia. So Jibin and those people come from Afghanistan and from Gandhara. Gandhara actually come from Udyana, yes? The north of Gandhara is Udyana. It's Udyana, the Swat Valley. I always write like that. But you can also write like that. That's also possible. Many ways to write this. Udiana. You can even write Udiana with an O.
Didi.
Yeah, so. But it is the area of the river Swat. Suvastu in Sanskrit. Swat Valley is.
Suvastu.
Is a nice location.
Nice.
Suvastu, that's what is known as the Swat River. Very dangerous area today. So it's in the north of Pakistan. Very mountainous area. And in the, as I said, I found in some Jataka that Uddiyana is famous for its Kambala.
It's Kambala.
Just as Benares is famous for silk. Banasi silk is very famous. So, and Swat area, Diana is famous for Kambala. So I immediately associated G with Kambala. So this is the traditional one. And this is much earlier than Kanishka's Sangiti. It is mentioned in Chinese sources 2 centuries BC. So it cannot be Kashmir. Yeah. 2 centuries BC is much too early for Kashmir. So this is the traditional one. And the K is Kashmir. Kashmir comes into Buddhism, comes into the Northwest at the time of Kanishka, which is the second half of the 2nd century AD. And it becomes a very important part of the Northwest because that is the Vaibhashika orthodoxy there, very important part. So people ever since have been seeing Kashmir as very central. But all those Indians arriving in the East, they still all come from this area. They all come from this area. When a source says this Chinese, this Indian monk comes from Jibin, they always mean Afghanistan or Pakistan. So if you know that, and it's not Kashmir, this is already one very important change. Very important. And the second is the Sangha Veda. If you know, the first Sangha Veda, the first split, we have been talking about it, the first split, yes, between Staviras and Mahasangitas. Yes? After Vaishali, before Ashoka.
After Vaishali?
Before Ashoka. Because in Ashoka, only Staviras took place. So after Vaishali, before Ashoka, and in Patna, in Pataliputra, input. Now it all depends on when you want to locate that, after Ashoka, before Ashoka, after Vaishali, in Pataliputra. Probably, if you want to put a date on it, it's probably 300 and a little bit more than 300 BC. More than maybe 320, 30, 40 maybe even, BC. So before Ashoka, Ashoka is the 3rd century BC in general. So Vaishali is the 4th century BC. So it must be around 300 or maybe 310, 20, maybe even 30, 40 BC. After Vaishali, before Ashoka. That's the first split, Mahasangika and Savitavada. If you know that, and that they use each other's ideas, you know? They use each other to the point where it's sometimes very difficult to distinguish whether it is a Savitavada idea or a Mahasangika idea, because both use it. And if both use it, the problem is who used it first, you know? Like the Tathagata Garba idea. I did not talk much about the Tathagata Garba idea.
Yeah.
But the Tathagata Garba idea is
Sarvastivada.
Yes, I'm more and more convinced it's Sarvastivada originally. But Mahasangika has also used it. Mahayana uses it very often. So
yeah.
They use each other's idea. That makes it confusing. But if you know those two things, then many new insights are possible. Yes. necessary. But to these are two things, and if you see those two things, it's so yeah, many. Even kache in Tibetan, you know, kache is Tibetan for kache. They say this is Kashmir. Kache is, they always say Kashmir, but it is also the traditional. Kache is actually jibi. The Tibetan word kache actually means jibi, which in Tibetan times is very often Kashmir. And because Tibet is 7th century and later. So in Tibetan times, kache, this jibin is very often Kashmir, yes. But it is also possible that it is the old part. So when someone goes to Tibet, you know Padmasambhava?
Yeah.
He comes from the area of the Suvastu River, yes, from Udyana. He comes from here, yeah. Not from Kashmir. And he's a man from Kachi. And many people come from that area.
That means Jibi.
The way, by the way, that if you travel, so here are the mountains. Here is the Swat. And here is Khotan. And here is Kashgar. And here is Dunhuang in China. So if you go from Pakistan, from Swat, you can cross the mountains. There is a highway, even today, called the Karakoram Highway. You take a bus and you just go north. And you arrive somewhere here, actually. But from here, it's not very far to Khotan, very close. From Khotan, it is very close to travel to Tibet. Very close. So from the Swat, from Udyana, just like Padmasambhava, you just cross the mountains, Karakoram Mountains, to here, not far from Khotan, that's where the road links. Go through Khotan to Tibet, it's an easy way. And in the first centuries AD, 1, 2, 3 century AD, beginning when the Kushanas were king, the great empire. They, at that time here, there was no desert yet. You had lowland, Kurodai, now you had some centers. But in the fourth century, those centers were just buried under the sand already. So the road to Khotan did not go further, you know, because here there was nothing anymore. It was buried under the sand. So if you wanted to go here, you had to go from here.
Yes.
See? Because this road was closed. So you had to go from there to Kuchang. You had to go there, that way. So Khotan in the first, second, third century was a very busy road to Khotan. From here to there was a very busy road. And then you could go east. But when this road is closed, you can still go to Khotan and go to Tibet, but you cannot go to China anymore because the road is closed here. From Khotan, it's easy to go to Tibet. To the Tibetan area is quite simple. But because the road here is closed, Lolan was under the sand, Nia was under the sand, no, nothing anymore. So this road didn't travel anymore. So everybody took this road from Afghanistan to Kashgar, to Kuchang, to Dunhuang, because this was closed. So from the fourth century, it becomes this road. Road changes. But still, it's from Jibin. In this case, from here, and in the last case, it is from there. It is never from Kashmir. It is never. So the Indians arriving there. Yes. Right now I'm looking into some Zen text, Bodhidharma. You know Bodhidharma,
yes.
The founder of Zen?
Yes.
There is a source which says he's a Persian.
Persian.
Yeah. He's a Persian from the central, from the western regions.
Western Bactria.
From the western region, yes, true. He's a Persian from the western regions. That's here.
Bactria.
And the neighbors here are Persian.
Yeah.
Persian, that means Iran.
Yes.
Yeah.
And even Kanishka, his own religion was Mazdaism. Ahura Mazda was the Persian kind of fire and light worship. Yes.
That was
that was Persian. Bactria has very strong Persian influence. Always had. So Bodhidharma, according to the sources, is a Persian from the western regions, from Bactria.
I see.
That's.
But it says that Bodhidharma was 28th patriarch in India.
What?
28th patriarch.
28?
28, yeah, he's not
having
the number.
And lineage.
Lineage.
He was the 28th, but first in China.
Yeah.
When he arrived in India. When he arrived
in China. Yeah.
So you had 27 before him.
Yeah.
27
yeah.
before, yeah.
The first one was Shakyamuni.
Yeah.
Not Kashyapa.
Kashyapa.
And it's very interesting if you look at the 20. Well, so, there's one source which says Gunabhadra was the first one.
Yeah.
So that's 27.
Yeah, he was.
And number 27 is Gunabhadra, and he is the one who brought it to China. But most people say it is Bodhidharma, and he's 28. Personally, I believe it's number 27 who's correct, because the Lankavatara Sutra was brought to China by Gunabhadra, not by Bodhidharma. So Gunabhadra brought all the ideas. Why did they not choose Gunabhadra? Probably because, well, Zen does not like texts, yes?
Yeah.
Zen is only practice. So Bodhidharma is a one who practices. He's famous for his practice.
Nice.
So that's why they choose him. On the other hand, the one who really introduced all the new ideas is Gunabhadra. But he's not a famous practitioner. This is the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm. Did the Gunabhadra was the teacher of Bodhidharma?
No. But Gunabhadra comes from Pataliputra, from Madhya Desha. He's a Brahmin. He goes to Lanka, and from Lanka he takes a boat and arrives in South China. And if you look at the literature which he brings to South China, Lankavatara Sutra, some texts about Sandinirmochana Sutra. Text about Alaya Vijnana. So it's, and the Lankavatara Sutra is very important for early Zen. It's even called the Lanka school at the beginning. You know. So it's Gunabhadra's influence. But he's not a practitioner, he's not famous for his practice, Bodhidharma is. And because Zen only likes the practice, they choose Bodhidharma.
No, especially two and just gate.
I'm not saying Bodhidharma was born in Bactria as a person, you know.
No,
it
isn't.
There is our sources which say he was born
in the south.
India, yeah. More or less, he was born in Andhra, in the south. But the family was of Gandavati origin.
Royal family, is it?
A royal family, well, yes.
I don't believe
that. Well, whether it was royal or not, Brahmin or not, because Brahmins normally are not kings, normally not. Kshatriyas are normally the Brahmins are not
kings.
But some in Southeast Asia, in this area, many people, name ending in Varman, were Brahmins. Not Kshatriyas, and there were kings.
I think they're small kings.
So, but this is a detail. His origin is, I'm sure, Bactria, and he was Persian family, yes. But that means coming from here, yes?
Yeah.
Now it is, as I just said, we said before, it's that you can go to Mathura along the rivers, go south, it's quite easy. It's a long way, but many people have done it.
Yeah.
Paramartha comes from here. Many people come, and art also. You can find art objects which begin here and are found in Gandhara.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's not only objects, also people went that way. So he was born here, but his family originally comes from here. So the family of Bodhidharma is from Jibin origin, from Gandharan origin, the Gandharan cultural area origin. But he was born in the south. Yeah, and there he took a boat.
To the south in China.
Yeah, that's it. The roads which were followed, quite interesting. And anyway, we are in this in Jibin, and we finished Ashoka. Mm-hmm. And the second century is an important century. It's a very good question for to ask you, describe the Sarvastivada situation in the second century. You know, in that case, you have to explain the traditional Jibin and the new Kashmir. And what happened in the new Kashmir center? The new Abhidharma, the new Vinaya. And when the new Abhidharma begins, you have Sautrantikas who do not believe in this new Abhidharma. When the new Vinaya is there, you have the word Darshtantikas, those who do not believe in the new, who do not follow the new short Vinaya. They are keep the long one. So in that's what happened in the second century. The second century is an important century for, especially for Sarvastivada. Probably not only for Sarvastivada. But let me keep it to limit to Sarvastivada. And the last stage in the development is the Mula Sarvastivada. The Mula, which at the end of the seventh century, at that time the new Kashmiris, the Vaibhashikas. Why are they called Vaibhashika? Because of their Mahavibhasha. There were Vibhashas, many of them. We only have two in Chinese. But there were many Vibhashas on Ashtagrantha, on the old Gandharan text. Many Vibhashas, many commentaries. But because the Ashtagrantha was written again in Sanskrit with changes, you need new commentary. New commentary is Mahavibhasha. And because of this Mahavibhasha, they're called Vaibhashik. So the Vaibhashikas at the end of the 7th century, they lose. They're the minority. The majority looked like Vaibhashikas, and the Vaibhashikas were a small group. So it all unite came together again. They all united. At the end of the 7th century, all united, because the non-Vaibhashikas had little by little adapted to, agreed more and more with the Vaibhashikas. So at the end of the 7th century, they were almost the same. So the Vaibhashikas looked like one group of traditional ones. Do you see the reasoning?
Yeah.
And everybody is called Mula Sarvastivada. We know Mula Sarvastivada Vinaya is very long. We have it in complete in Tibetan translation. Complete Tibet, and we have some fragments, parts in Sanskrit, found in Gilgit, in the stupa in Gilgit, in Gandhara. Not Kashmir, you say, you don't find anything in Kashmir. You find it in Gilgit, in Gandhara, and some small parts in Chinese translation. So the Mula Sarvastivadins are the traditional ones, just because of their Vinaya. It's quite clear.
Yeah.
This is the development of, so I can only just add one more remark which came up during a question of yours, which is, those traditional ones, the ones in traditional Tibet, the non-Vaibhashikas, did they also have 7 texts? I think so. There are some hints, but they are not the 7 texts in Kashmir. But slightly different texts. They had a prajñaptipada. They had some, there is some Chinese information to say, to make us conclude that maybe the non-vaibhashikas also had seven texts. Hari Varman is a very important source. Hari Varman explains there are seven texts. And Hari Varman was a non-vaibhashika. He was a Sautrantika kind of fellow. So it, when he mentions seven texts, must be that they have seven texts too. So one plus six. But we're not very wide. There is one, the Prakaranapada, two Chinese translations. One is very good Vaibhashika, made by the monk Xuandang. The other one is non-Vaibhashika. So it seems like the others also had seven texts, but not Buddha Bhashita. Not Buddha Bhashita. Because no, only Kashmir had Buddha Bhashita. This is about the development of Sarvastivada. It's what you also should be, well, for example, what is the whole history leading up to Abhidharma Kosha Bhashya? It's also a good problem. Abhidharma Kosha Bhashya is the end of a development. So which development? It starts with Abhidharma Hridaya and commentaries, Mishraka, Abhidharma Kosha Bhashya, and that Abhidharma is absolutely not Vaibhashika. And see that it's different from the Vaibhashika tradition. So this is also important. So the more we talk about it, the more it becomes clear that the Vaibhashikas are the exception, are not the rule. The rule are the traditional ones. And the Vaibhashikas are mostly limited to Kashmir, end of 2nd century, until end of 7th century in Kashmir. So this is, you can limit them in time and in place. In time, it is end of 2nd century to end of 7th century. Then they still exist, Vaibhashikas, and in Kashmir. You can locate them in time and in place. There were some in Central Asia too. We have Vaibhashika manuscripts found in the desert in Central Asia. So they must have been there too. But they were never influential. And in East Asia, not at all.
When you say the Mula Sarvastivada, that means in this three whole area, including the Mathura, four.
Yes. Yes, more. So, actually I have more ideas than that, you know. Now that you ask the question, okay, this last day I can tell them to you. So, we talked about traveling from Pataliputra, yes, the Vibhajavadins went, Sarvastivadins went, Mahasangikas went, and also all went to Gandhara, to here, yes? And from here you could go there, through the Khyber Pass. Okay. I think the Sarvastivadins went first. So they came from Patna, Mathura, went to Gandhara, and kept going. The Mahasangikas came a little bit later, and they all took the same way to Mathura, to Gandhara, but they did not go here. I think they drove away the Sarvastivadins out of here to there. only Peshawar, which is very close to the mountain pass, to the Khyber Pass. Yeah. Only Peshawar still had Sarvastivada, Asanga was about it. But the majority here was Mahasangika.
But it was the death center, how they can drop out from there.
Well, all Mahasangikas came, so the Sarvastivadins moved on. I think originally everything was quite Sarvastivada area. And the Mahasangikas came in and became the majority in Gandhara.
Which century? Which century?
Well, when the Ashta Sahasrika was translated in the 2nd century AD, 1st, 2nd century AD, it was already majority Mahasangika here. Maybe it started earlier, but when it, based on Chinese translations by monks coming from Gandhara, using Gandharan literature, it's Mahasangika. We can conclude that Gandhara was mainly Mahasangika. Lokakshema was from Gandhara, translated. So I guess first came the Sarvastivadins, then came the Mahasangikas, and they became the majority in Gandhara. That's why Gandhara has so much Mahasangika. Prajna Paramita is very strong in Gandhara. I think, and only the Gandharan Peshawar, because this is the pass, you know, the mountain pass. So there you still have the Sarvastivadins. But here is a majority in Gandhara. I can have another thing which you can think about, Udyara, the north of Gandhara, has Sarvastivada, has also Mahasangika, but has also Dharmaguptaka and Kashyapriya has more schools. We know that because from there it is easy to go to Bhutan, as I said. So literature which comes from Udyana you can find in Bhutan. For example, Dharmaguptaka literature. So that's another reason why I think Mahasangika came later. So it was a Stavida area at first. And then Mahasangikas come in and become the majority here. So the others, you can still find them up north, and they go
west,
you see. That's why I think Mahasangikas come later and become the majority in Gandhara. I have not yet written about that, but if you see the situation, well, I have not yet clearly explained like that, but if you, I've mentioned it in some footnotes. You can see this in the Udana Varga, for instance. But that's another subject. Maybe that's another course. I mentioned it there. This is probably true. So Gandhara is majority Mahasangika. You can understand the Pradakshina, you know. It goes from south to north, anyway, and the north is Gandhara, and Mahasangika, Prajnaparamita is Mahasangika. So they have majority, they become the most numerous monks there. But they also go, there are also some in Bhaktiya, you know. I'm not saying Bhaktiya does not have Mahasangikas, I'm not saying that. I'm only saying majority is Sarvastivada. Also some Mahasangikas. There's one center in the city of Termez, which is in Uzbekistan now, had a very large Mahasangika monastery. So, and this is traditionally Sarvastivada area. So and when you have majority Mahasangika, also you can have some Sarvastivada, of course. It is not that, that clean separation, you know. It's just majority. This is a, well, so if someone of you wants to write some PhD about this, the spread of Buddhism based on situations, but problem is you'll need a little bit of Chinese. This, you know, because so much exists in Chinese material. If you are basing yourself only on Abhidharma Kosha Bhasha and the Sanskrit Ashta Sahasrika, it's not enough. It's not, you get more information if you have the Chinese. And the Chinese, not much is translated. Everybody translates Lotus Sutra again, you know. Everybody translates Vimalakirti Nirdesha again, you know. This, everybody, always the same things. It's easy because you can use the old books and write your new book, you know. It's very easy. But to start something completely else, different, which, that's a bigger problem. So you need a little bit of Chinese. And the Chinese also have a problem, you know, because they don't know the Indian situation. They don't have a clue how you pronounce those Indian names.
Yeah. They need a team.
I give you one example about Sukhavati.
Sukhavati.
Yeah, sure. Well, there is one another translation which says
happy
means sukha.
Sukha.
It means the Chinese happy.
This
is sukha happy, yes? And the other one means increase.
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 Vati.
Now this is, yes, very good. Yes, very good. This is from Pali, from Prakrit. Yeah. No, this could be Verdi in Sanskrit. It could be Verdi. And you could have some. It could be Vati. It could be close to Vati, you see? So this increase in happiness is actually also a translation of Sukhavati, but based on Prakrit pronunciation, especially for this last part, Verdi and Bhati.
Yeah.
So the Chinese didn't have a clue what it meant. Increase in happiness, yes, that makes sense for a paradise, of course. But that's not what it means in the original Indian language. So the Chinese have a problem with the Indian side.
Yeah, India side.
And that's what makes, and there is always this division between China and India. You know, this actually, they should work together and come up with some new good Buddhist ideas. You know,
I still don't understand why they try to translate even the name.
Yeah. Well, this is the name, but I'm only giving the name, but this is because that is obvious. If you take Mahavibhasha, for instance, okay, Vaibhashikas, Mahavibhasha, very long text, we have no Sanskrit. But it's full of Indian information in there. So if you do not have any idea about the Indian situation, how can you understand this Chinese?
Yeah.
It's the whole text, the whole development, you don't know. And how are those people called? Even Kumaralata, the name of Kumaralata is quite new. We know this, it is a German in the 50s, 1950s. Who studied a manuscript from Turfan and who found this Kalpana Manditika, Der Stand der Pankti, written by Kumaralata. So then we know the Sanskrit is Kumaralata, but before that we had some Chinese names. So people were saying maybe Kumara Labdha or Kumara whatever. But Kumara, everybody seemed to agree, apparently. But the second part was different interpretations. So when we had Kumaralata, we know. So sometimes you need Indian information to understand your Chinese, really. You understand both, you need both too. And that's a problem. About the text which we have been reading, about kleshas. Well, I'm never going to ask you to explain the 98 urges. because that would be an urge that would be in the klesha of the one who asks such questions. But I could say give other names for kleshas and explain, you know. Yesterday we saw that, you know, it can be oga, yoga, it can be asrava. It can be, yesterday we saw Samyojana, you know, and Anushaya and Klesha, those are also all two words, and then I give some explanation for that, and say what the 10 Kleshas are. That you should know, which are the 10 Kleshas. And that's Dharma Shrestha's idea. The Agama Nikaya kind of seven ones you should also, maybe you already know. You have Kamaraga and Bhavaraga. Yesterday we saw you have seven. Traditionally, in the Agama Nikaya tradition, you have seven. which ones. So those things, that's important to know. This is. Well, I guess, any more questions? I think I have already said the most important things, actually. It's the same.
Yes.
Yes, in Abhidharma, later they become different. And I think originally they were also different, because you have two words, and you do not have two words for exactly the same thing. So if you have Anushaya and Klesha, there must have been some difference. But you know the difference, you know? Anushaya lies in your mind. It's, you have lots of Anushayas, but you don't know it. It's just sleeping in your, it is lying there. Sleeping in your mind, it lies there. It should be activated. It should be activated to become klesha. So the klesha, the impurity, klish means to make impure, to make dirty. So klesha is something which makes one's mind dirty. But anushaya, it lies there. Anushi is just, it lies doing nothing. Doing nothing. It just lies there doing nothing, not active at all. So that's the original meaning. So it is in your mind, but it must be activated. And this is explained in Abhidharma Kosha Bhasha. Much of what is not clear in Abhidharma Hridaya is explained in Abhidharma Kosha Bhasha. Actually all of it. It's not only in Abhidharma Kosha Bhasha, also in Mishrak Abhidharma Hridaya, but we do not have Indian text anymore. Because Abhidharma Kosha Bhasha is based on Mishrak Abhidharma Hridaya, which is commentary of Abhidharma Hridaya. Even that simple fact is very often not known. Even by Japanese friends. I've seen a book written when a good friend of mine went retired from university. All his colleagues and friends, not all of them, many of them, wrote article in honor of the one who is leaving. And the name is Kato Junshō. And when I looked through the contributions, through the texts, almost all of them, actually all of them, as far as I can remember, said Abhidharma Hridaya was a summary of the Abhidharma Kosha Bhasha. So the Abhidharma developed, became very long in Abhidharma Kosha Bhasha, and then it became too long, so it needed the summary. This is what they all said. They even forgot about their own Japanese scholar. In 1922, Kimura Taiken, who was the Japanese, in China you had Liu Chang, those people, you had some very great scholars of Buddhism in early 20th century. So in 1922, the Japanese scholar, Kimura Taiken, he really made it clear, he compared the first chapter, Dhatu Nirdesha, of Abhidharma Kosha Bhasha, and the first chapter of Mishraka Abhidharma Hridaya. Then he said the original Indian text clearly must have been the same or very similar. Of course, the Chinese translations were different, but if you look at it carefully, he said original Indian text must have been almost the same. He said that in 1922. Now, if this is the case, it is quite obvious that they are related, yes? And Mishraka is a commentary of Abhidharma Hridaya. We also know that.
Yeah, but is the mix of Bible second?
Yes, so, but the Mishraka is, anyway, the Mishraka must be later than the Hridaya. Because it's a commentary on that. Yeah. So how can the Hridaya be a summary of the Abhidharma Kosha Bhasha?
No, it's not possible.
It's
not possible.
So this Japanese scholar Kimura Taiken in 1922 already clearly showed that Vasubandhu used Mishra Kabidharma Hridaya. He clearly wrote this clear article. And it's even more interesting that because after this Japanese scholar died, his collected works were all taken together and edited again in the 70s. And there again, it is mentioned. But nobody seems to pay attention to what he wrote. Everybody keeps repeating, no, Hridaya is a summary of the kosha, which is not true. It cannot be true. Even Japanese scholars said so in 1922.
There are 300 years difference between
them. Another very important reason is the development in East Asia, in China. You clearly see first an Abhidharma school based on Ashtagrantha, Mishraka Abhidharma Hridaya, and very much studied in South China, and they call it an Abhidharma school. After that, comes Paramartha, translates Abhidharma Kosha Bhasha for the first time. So this Abhidharma school disappears, and a Kosha school comes in its place. So it's clear that this Abhidharma Kosha is the same tradition as those Abhidharma school texts, yes? Because it just replaces them. And then Xuanzang comes along, gives a new translation, and this is the new Kosha school, replaces Paramartha's old Kosha school. So this whole development clearly shows that the Abhidharma Kosha Bhasha is a later development after Mishraka, after Hridaya and all that. Even that, so that you have a clear indication when you look at the history in East Asia, clear indication when you read Kimura 1922 articles, and still people keep saying it's a summary. If you keep repeating that, that's also a klesha, you know. it is even worse than moha. It is very, very moha. Strong, you know.
Strong
moha. This, what, any more? No, is that it? So everything else is clear.
Yeah.
When we talk about Mahasanghika Abhidharma, it's quite easy, you know.
Yeah.
Mahasanghika Abhidharma, it doesn't exist. So, all right. So all the teaching is done. Mahasanghika, they don't have Upadesha.
Yeah.
Only Bhava Shrutiyas maybe have some Abhidharma-like text. Maybe we don't have it, but maybe. But normally they have Upadesha. And difference between, as you have in Pal, in Petakopadesa, yes? Petakopadesa is originally Mahasanghika, I'm sure. It comes from outside the tradition, so it's not in the Tipitaka. In Sri Lanka. Petakopadesa is Pali. And Buddhaghosa knows it. He mentions it. Buddhaghosa mentions Petakopadesa. So why did he, how did he, I guess because he comes from South India, you know? Because he comes from Mahasanghika area. You know, it's another hint. It's not a proof. That's not proof. I said we don't work with proof. We only work with if it's possible, likely, most likely, like that, things like that. That is how Buddhist studies work. Not proof, but many people want proof, especially if they don't understand, then they want proof. Many people easily understand situation even with a little bit of information here and there. Not only Buddhism, but I'm speaking in general.
Yeah.
If you have a few things, you put them together and you see what's happening. Some people you can give them whole newspapers, you know. They still don't know what's happening. And they are probably the ones who still need more proof. So we don't work with proof, with probability. So what I'm saying is, The closest thing to proof, I already said so, is that when an explanation works, when the explanation explains many things which otherwise you cannot explain. So if it works, if it can be applied, if it is useful for many situations, then it is probably very close to the truth.
Yeah.
If it can explain more than before, it's probably true. This and this, for example, Jibin and the first Sangha Veda, those are which allow us to explain more. For example, the bacteria kind of Jibin thing. As I said, 2 days ago now, yesterday it was 1 day ago, 2 days ago now, there was this study in India about the Ekotarikagama and the origin and the development and the history of Ekotarikagama. And this author, a new one, clearly now says, bacteria, Sangadeva in bacteria, this is new. This is new. And even if he does not say that he saw it in my Japanese article, I'm still happy because the result is good. You know? It's all about result and about being able to explain. That's all. But before you can do that, we need the tradition. Should not neglect the tradition, but we should not stop there. That's all. Okay.
Question.
Yes.
How about final examination?
You get some questions, and then you give some answers.
Yeah.
Okay. But I guess I'm prepared already very well by now. So
take picture.
You will not get questions which were not treated today.